You know, every week we are blessed by this choir and by Angie's tinkling of the ivories. And I just want to say thank you. You guys are just beautiful this morning, as always, and really wonderful. So let's give it up for the choir. February 1st, this week, Thursday, marked the 50th anniversary of the death of Echo, Cole, and Robert Walker. Many of you may not remember their names, but they were two Memphis sanitation workers who were crushed while doing their job in Memphis, February 1st, 1968. Their death, the working conditions in which they worked under, which really led to them being in a place where their work would cause them to die, and the racially determined pay that paid these African-American men so little was what sparked the Memphis Sanitation Workers Strike of 1968. It was the last direct action that Martin Luther King Jr. was in, was a part of. February 1st was the 50th anniversary of an event that happened in 1968, and I have a feeling that this year in 2018, we're going to be noticing a whole lot of 50th anniversaries. 1968 was a year of turmoil, tragedy, travail, distress, discord. On April 4th, we will recognize the 50th anniversary of the death of Martin Luther King Jr. Just a few months later, on June 5th, will be the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. 1968 was a turning point in the Vietnam War, something that as a 12-year-old, 11 or 12-year-old, I was just on the outskirts of understanding what was going on. And those of you who have a slightly longer tooth than I know exactly the turmoil that we were in 1968. The Tet Offensive launched in January of 1968 that in many ways turned the war. The My Lai massacre that happened in March that we only found out about a year or so later. Walter Cronkite, the moral voice of the nation, going on the news and saying that something was wrong in Vietnam and that we needed to come to the negotiating table as fair and just partners. It was a time, 1968, of unrest throughout. College campuses had people had marches and sit-ins and any number of threats of violence and National Guard being called in. But it wasn't only in the U.S. There was the worker strike that shut down Paris. There's the strikes that went throughout Mexico City, and hundreds of people who lost their lives. 1968 was a year of distrust, a year of discord, a year that for many folks in the middle of that year felt like a year of despair. People were being marginalized, people were being pitted against one another, and it just seemed like folks were itching for a fight. We saw that at the Chicago Democratic National Convention and many other places. And so as we now, 50 years later, look back, and we will have noted throughout the year the 50th anniversary of many things, there are many of us that look 50 years later and feel like we are in a similar kind of moment where there is a lot of distrust and turmoil that exists within our community, that there is divisiveness on the political scene not only, but divisiveness within our community where folks have a hard time coming to the table and actually talking and being in the same room together. There is discord, and there seems to be a growing interest on some folks to bloody one another's noses in the midst of all of this. 1968 was a year of despair, and I know in conversation that I have had with many of you that 2018 feels somewhat despairing as well. We are not alone in having years that feel that way. Think back to the scriptures that Linda read for us from Isaiah. The people that Isaiah was writing to some 2,600 years ago had every reason to be in a time of despair. They were in exile. This was no longer the golden era of the chosen people, when King David and King Solomon had been ruling for close to 80 years, and that 80 years they saw a kingdom consolidated. They saw its borders pushed as far as could possibly be. They became the center of trade from all over the world. There was wealth, there was work, there was things that the people of Israel 500 years before, when they might have been slaves in Egypt, might never have been able to dream it could be like this. But somehow that could not last. And soon after Solomon dies, civil war erupts and the kingdom gets divided in two. And after generations pass through, the Assyrians come and they exile a half of the people. And 100 years later or so, the Babylonians come in and the other half is exiled. And now a people who defines themselves by their place have been displaced. And a people who define themselves by their law suffer under the law of someone else. This would be, for any, a time of despair. And yet, do you hear despair in the words that Linda read for us from Isaiah? Chapter 40 of Isaiah that begins with those words that we're so familiar with, those who listen to Handel's Messiah, comfort, comfort ye my people. And then today's scripture, have you not heard, have you not seen? God inhabits the entirety of the creation. God does not weary or tire. And indeed, God will give power to those who are tired, will revive those who are exhausted. No matter the external circumstances, Isaiah is saying to us, God is indeed present here and now. Exile will not be forever. Despair will not always define our days. Joy will indeed return. And he says these words in the midst of a people in exile, in the midst of a people that might very well leave themselves in despair. My first spiritual director that I had when I was in divinity school, during a time of fairly deep despair in my own life, taught me this truism from Ignatian spirituality, St. Ignatius, the founder of the Jesuits. And it simply says that in a time of desolation, remember the consolation. In a time of desolation, in a time of despair, remember that which consoles, the presence of God, the love of God. Do not forget the love of God, Isaiah is saying to the people, the promise of God, the presence of God. Look for it in the simple acts, look for it in the tiniest of acts, but never stop being aware of it in a time of desolation and despair. Remember the consolation. So if we look back 50 years and we look to 1968 and we look at the despair, the desolation of 1968, let us as well be aware of the consolating moments, that which was also so very powerful in 1968. In Memphis, when the sanitation workers began to march, they put on a simple sign. It said, I am a man. It was when these African-American adult males said, no longer will we be defined by the derogatory boy. We are men. And they stood proud. That pride, they cast not only pride for themselves, but pride that has gone past the generations, year after year, as folks have stood forward and said, with the fullness of who they are as creatures of God, children of God. In October of 1968, 32 nations from Africa boycotted the Olympics that would be held in Mexico City because of the presence of a country in their neighborhood, South Africa, ruling itself by apartheid. And though apartheid had another generation before it would go away, it was one of the beginning times of when we began to take notice and began to see the dismantling of that racist regime. And at those very same Olympics, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, first and third place in the 100-meter dash, African-American men stood on a podium, lowered their head, and raised their fist to draw attention to the plight of what was happening back in their country. And though there were many that disagreed with their act at that time, 50 years later, we look at them and we look at it with pride, and we look at them and we look at them with honor, for their willingness to stand forward when no one else was able to at that moment. And let us not forget that it was on Christmas Eve, 1968, when around the world people were gathered around radios and they listened to a broadcast coming from the other side of the moon as Apollo 8 made its first orbit around the moon, the first time to do so. And not only did we for the first time see the dark side of the moon, but for the first time as they came around, they saw the Earth as one in ways we had never seen it before. We cannot forget if we look at 50 years later at 1968 and we see it as a time of despair, we cannot also forget these moments that are moments that lifted us up, moments that made us realize of God's presence, moments that made us stand forward as warriors for peace and warriors for justice, to stand forward in the light of love. And so today, in what for some folks may feel like a time of despair and desolation, where is indeed the consolation? And I just want to turn again to the metaphor that Isaiah lifts up. Because he says towards the end, he says, those who wait upon the Lord, those who hope expectantly for God's presence, those who know that love shall triumph, that justice will see the day, they shall mount up with wings like eagles. And we think about eagles and we think about their beauty of soaring and we think about, oh, how wonderful, what a beautiful picture. But let's look just a little bit more closely at eagles, particularly with their young. Did you know that the first flight that a fledgling eagle usually takes is one they don't realize is a flight? But they're sitting in the nest. And in the nest, the parent eagle will come by and will flap their wings with such force as they hover above that it creates an updraft that actually lifts those baby eagles just ever so slightly in their nest. And I look around, and the question that I ask is, are those folks here in 2018 in amongst us and around in our community that are doing that hard work of just beginning to plant the first seeds of flight for the baby eagles wanting one day to soar? The next flight that an eagle will oftentimes take is from nest to a nearby branch. And it's when the parent eagle has said, enough, it's time to move. This is who you are. You can't just sit still and sit on your hands or your wings or whatever it is that an eagle might sit on. It is time that we step forward and move into the world, for the world is calling us. And how do they do that? Sometimes they do it by flying repeatedly over the fledgling with food in their mouth. You want it? You got to come get it. Who amongst us, where do we see that in our community? That folks that are leading us and saying, you want to be part of this? You come be part of this. You want to stand for justice? You come and you stand for justice. And the third flight that an eagle may oftentimes take is when it moves from nest to branch to open flight. But rarely does it do it alone. Because the parent eagle is there, and if they start to fly and they begin to flutter, the parent eagle is there to lift them up on eagle's wings until they finally can fly. Because ultimately, what we are all called to do in the most despairing of times, in the most wonderful of times, is to be able to have that which the eagles have, that where there are storms and troubles, that we may be able to ride the thermals above them and, when necessary, dive through and pierce them so that our voices and our presence may be known. In a time of desolation, do not forget the consolation. It's very powerful to remember that. And in so very many ways, if we find ourselves in a time of despair within our world, within our community, we must remember the consolation of God's presence in and amongst us, giving us the slightest of lift, giving us the slightest of push, giving us the slightest of support, but it is there that we may one day soar. But you know, it's interesting. Ignatius did not just say, in times of desolation, remember the consolation. He also said the opposite. He said, in times of consolation, when all seems to be so good, do not forget the desolation. And it's important that we lift that up. It is important that we see both sides of the coin. It is also important that we understand that life is not always despairing. Life is sometimes quite good, but in the midst of that good, we must be aware of our call to where there is, may well be struggle in our world. The scripture that Linda read for us from the Gospel of Mark, the first draft of this sermon, the title for this sermon was A Little Kick in Their Giddy-Up. Doesn't quite have the same ring as Mount Up Like Eagle's Wings. But I was thinking about this story from the Gospel of Mark where Jesus has just, as we talked about last week, just come out of the synagogue for the first time. And as he's there, this demon-possessed person comes to him and starts yelling at him, and Jesus yells back and restores him to his humanity, as we talked about. And then the story picks up, and I'm sorry, the image that I have as I read it was like a couple of adolescent boys, Jesus and James and John and Peter. They're like, oh my gosh, that was amazing! Did you see what he just did? And so then they go to Peter's mother-in-law's house and they go, Mom, you should have seen it. There's nothing that Kirsten and I like more than when our children come home with their friends and their friends want to tell us about what's going on in the world. And so here's Peter wanting to tell his mother-in-law about it, except for she's not well. Jesus says, no worry, I got this. Goes upstairs, touches her, takes her hand, raises her up. She comes down and starts making dinner. What a deal. But can't you see the boys sitting around the table eating pizza and beer and talking about all the things that they can do because of what they have seen? And later that night, people start coming from all over the place, the whole town, it says. But they're sick, coming with those that they say are possessed by demons. And Jesus touches them and heals them. And those that are thirsty have drink, and those that are hungry have food, those that are blind can see, and the deaf can hear, the lame can walk. It's amazing. And Jesus says, I got to take a little bit of a break. So he goes off, and not too long later, Peter says, what do we do now? I mean, Jesus, this is amazing. And Jesus says, well, let's go to the next town. And so they go to the next town, and as I read it, it just felt like in the beginning of Jesus' ministry, they're just so full of the possibilities. But we also know that the road out of Capernaum ultimately is a road that leads to Golgotha. And we also know that what seems to be in which everything is possible, there will be a time when the disciples are pulling out their hair because the impossible seems to have happened. In the time of consolation, do not lose sight of the desolation. As people of faith, as a community of faith, as a beloved community, we are called to stand in this strange and wonderful place where we absorb and we take in and we become part of that loving and amazing spirit of God's presence. And at the same time, we are called into a world that does not know it. And it is our call to live it and be it. And that in itself may cause our own despair, and we may need someone else to remind us of all that is good. And we come to the table, and the table is the consolation and the desolation, is it not? All that is good is found right here. God's presence, God's love, God's gift of life. And yet wrapped up in all that goodness is hurt and pain. Bodies, bread that is broken, a body that is broken, blood that is spilled. But is that we might have life and that we might share that life with one another. So in a time of consolation, we remember the desolation. And in the time of desolation, we remember the consolation. And when we come to the table, we come to both. And it is good It is good that we are filled with the presence of God, because in so doing, we have the strength to rejoice and the strength to reach out, just as Christ did in his life with us. And so we remember that on that last night together, the boys and probably some of the girls were gathered around the table as they had done before. And Jesus understood the significance of what was going on, and he took bread and he broke it. He said, "This is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And in the same way, he took a cup. He poured the wine for all that were gathered there. He said, "This is the blood of the new covenant, my blood spilled for you and for all. Do this also in remembrance of me." So ministering in his name, knowing that here on the table is the presence of Christ, and here within us is the welcoming space for that presence, I invite you all to come forward and share in this meal.